The title of the sermon today, We Must Conquer Pride and Vanity. You know, Lucifer was created a perfect being. He was perfect in appearance, perfect in character. God created him. And we read of this exciting event in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 28, and in verses 12 through 14, we'll begin there. It says, Son of man, take up a lamentation for the king of Tyre, and say to him, Thus says the Lord God, You were perfect, or you were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Of course, Lucifer was there. Drop down to verse 14. You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were in the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones. You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created. He was perfect, brethren, from the day he was created until a point in time. In the latter part of this verse, it says, till iniquity was found in you. Lucifer was created perfect, but he became vain, brethren, in his thinking. He allowed pride and vanity to overtake his mind. We read of Lucifer's thoughts in the book of Isaiah. In Isaiah 14, and beginning in verse 12, he says, How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like, and actually a better rendition here of this, or translation would be, I will be the Most God. He allowed his pride and his vanity to get to the point to him, in him, where he was filled with self. And he decided he could take over the rulership of the universe. And in so doing, he lost all rights to that which he had been so blessed with by the Almighty. Today, we know that he is the prince of the power of the air, which includes the world and the surroundings that we all live in. But we also understand that he has become disqualified to continue and that he will soon be deposed. Yet he continues to this day to have influence in the lives of mankind with his evil approach to life. And it's very contagious, brethren. And it's something we need to think about today. Turn, if you will, to Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 2 and beginning in verse 1. It says, And you, speaking to people in the church, you he made alive who were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit which now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others. Yes, we've all come through this, brethren. Satan has lost the right to this position, prince of the power of the air, and he will soon be replaced by Jesus Christ, who will take all authority unto himself. Satan tried to use the tools of pride and vanity to defeat Christ when he was here, when Christ was on the earth, by his puny, deceptive approach. But that was no match to the character and the knowledge and the power that Christ possessed. The battle, of course, is recorded in the book of Matthew, chapter 4. We'll look at that momentarily. Matthew, chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry. Now, when the tempter came to him, he said, If you are the Son of Man, or the Son of God, command that these stones become bread. If you are the Son of God. But he answered and said, It is written, Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Notice how Satan tried to use this subtle deception of vanity with Christ. If you're the Son of God, then you can, this is no big thing for you to do this. You know, he tries the same tactic in verse 6, and then in verse 9, Satan offers to Christ all the kingdoms of the world, which at that time, for a short time, he could have given to Christ, if Christ would only kneel down and worship him. How many of us, brethren, could have rejected such an offer from Satan? But this offer of Satan in no way shook the resolve of Christ to follow God in his ways, which emphatically says, Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Mr. Armstrong often said that the root of sin lies with vanity and with pride. It was these attributes that caused Lucifer to turn from God and God's ways. And it was this same sin of pride and vanity that Satan tried to use to cause Christ to fall. He used it with Eve and he defeated the two of them. And of course, this is the same problem, pride and vanity, which cost Saul his position as king over Israel. You can read of this in 1 Samuel 15 and verses 16 and 17, where in fact we see that he was small in his own eyes when God appointed him king. But that all changed. He allowed pride and vanity to take over. And God will not condone pride and vanity in his people, brethren. It's Satan's way. But we must be careful in this because it is so easy for us to walk in this way. So how important is it that we be able to conquer this evil of pride and vanity in our lives? And we all have it. I mean, we have to face that. When we think of all the ways wherein pride and vanity enters into our lives, you know, we could probably become astounded just to think about it. You know, there's the pride of youth, the pride of old age, the pride of material possessions, the pride of our ability to accomplish, the pride of our children, the pride of knowledge attained, the pride of position achieved. You know, the rich young ruler, when he went to Christ, he wanted to become a follower of Christ, and Christ said, Well, do these things. He said, Well, I've done all that. And he said, Well, give up your wealth. Give up all that you have and come and follow me. He couldn't do it. Because, see, that was his pride. That illustrated what he had done, what he had achieved. We sum it all up with the phrase, the pride of life. It is not something that's of God, brethren. Well, what does God think concerning the subject of pride and vanity? We'll go through a number of scriptures today. Let's look first at Proverbs. Go to the Proverbs, and we'll go to Proverbs 6. Proverbs 6, and we'll begin in verse 16, go through 19. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren. God hates a proud look, brethren. Notice that pride heads up this list of the evils that God says he hates, which he outlines here. Look at Proverbs 16. Proverbs 16 and verse 5. Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though they join forces, none will go unpunished. Pride here, God refers to as an abomination. Notice Proverbs 21. Proverbs 21 and beginning in verse 2. Every way of man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. To do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. A haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin. So we see here that pride is sin. Brethren, it is contrary to God's way of life. Notice Psalms 101. Psalm 101, verse 5. Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. God says he will not endure one who is filled with pride and vanity. We have to rid ourselves of these things. Let's go to Isaiah. We're going to go through a lot of scriptures today because I want you to see what it is that God really feels about this subject. Isaiah chapter 2 and beginning in verse 10. Enter into the rock and hide in the dust from the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty. The lofty looks of man shall be humbled. The haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. For the day of the Lord of hosts shall come upon everything proud and lofty, upon everything lifted up, and it shall be brought low. When the day of the Lord begins to approach, brethren, men try to escape God's wrath. They hide in caves, wherever they can hide. Their pride will flee from them in that day. But we must not wait till that day to begin working on this. Isaiah 3 and verses 4 and 5. I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. The people will be oppressed, everyone by another, and everyone by his neighbor. The child will be insolent toward the elder and the base toward the honorable. I was thinking about this, and I said, well, now, all of you young people, remember this when you're dealing with Mr. Harris and myself. I won't include Mr. Link in that. He's still a young man. Well, you know, as we see these things, brethren, we begin to understand. The authorized version in this verse says that the child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient. That's what this verse means. Well, we're without excuse when it comes to the subject of pride and vanity. The scriptures are replete with the thoughts on this subject. I had gone this morning and just pulled out the concordance and looked up these two items and just started going through. And it is amazing all that's there. Well, let's reflect on a few scriptures which illustrate the sinful approach to life. Let's go first to 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 6, and beginning in verse 1. Let as many servants as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor, so that the name of God and his doctrine may not be blasphemed. And those who have believing masters, let them not despise them because they are brethren. You know, sometimes we resent people, brethren, because they're in a position and we're not there. But rather serve them, because those who are benefited are believers and beloved. Teach and exhort these things. If anyone teaches otherwise and does not consent to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but is obsessed with disputes and arguments over words, for which come envy and strife, reviling, evil suspicions, useless wranglings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. From such withdraw yourselves. You see what happens when pride enters into our minds, brethren? All of a sudden, we go off into all kinds of sin. Paul says if we will not live according to this doctrine of God, we're proud. And then he proceeds to describe the true nature of such a person who does this. And as you can see, he is not describing the character of a person in the process of conversion. And again, we need to think about it. Look at 2 Peter. 2 Peter chapter 2. And beginning in verse 1, but there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you, who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction. And many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. This is talking about today. This is talking about the people of God. By covetousness, they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time, their judgment has not been idle, and their destruction does not slumber. Let's drop down to verse 9. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment, especially those who walk according to the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise authority. They are presumptuous, self-willed, and are not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. Whereas angels, who are greater in power and might, do not bring a reviling accusation against them before the Lord. But these, like natural brute beasts, made to be caught and destroyed, speak evil of the things they do not understand, and will utterly perish in their own corruption, and will receive the wages of unrighteousness, as those who count it pleasure to carouse in the daytime. They are spots and blemishes in their own deceptions, while they feast with you. And drop down now to verse 18. For when they speak great swelling words of emptiness, and this word emptiness is vanity in the Authorized Version, they allure through the lusts of the flesh, through licentiousness, the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by whom a person is overcome, by him also he is brought into bondage. This is serious business, brethren, and we have to think about it. when we see pride swelling up in our lives. We have to get rid of it. Look at Psalm 10. Psalm 10. And beginning in verse 2. The wicked in his pride persecutes the poor. Let them be caught in the plots which they have devised. For the wicked boasts of his heart's desire. He blesses the greedy and renounces the Lord. The wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. So we see here a description of how pride affects the mind. God says it's wicked. We don't think about it often, brethren, but this is what God says. Proverbs 14 and verse 3. In the mouth of a fool is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise will preserve them. See, fools here are equated with pride. Proverbs 16, verses 18 and 19. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better to be a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. You see, brethren, pride pulls a person down. It does not elevate him except in his own mind. You see. Proverbs 29 and verse 23. A man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor. See, we have to replace pride with humility in our lives. That is the key. As we study God's Word, we see the destructive nature of pride and of vanity. And we come to understand the joy that comes with the opposite nature. That nature of humility is a characteristic of God that we must develop. Look at 2 Kings. 2 Kings 17 and verse 15. This occurs during the reign of Ahaz. It says, they rejected his statutes and his covenants, speaking of God's laws that he had made with their fathers, and his testimonies which he had testified against them. They followed idols. Now again, in the Authorized Version, this word idols is translated vanity. They followed vanity. Because idolatry is vanity, brethren. I mean, there is no God but one, and yet when people worship anything above God, they commit idolatry, and that is vanity. They followed vanity, became idolaters, and went after the nations who were all around them, concerning whom the Lord had charged them that they should not do like them. So we see that many times in the New King James Version, we have to go back and determine exactly what is being said because the translation sometimes isn't exactly right. Look at Job. Job 15. We'll see this in a number of places, this point that I just made. Job 15 and verse 31. Let him not trust in futile things, deceiving himself, for futility will be his reward. Now again, the words futile and futility are both translated vanity in the Authorized Version. Notice that here the word things is added. It's in italics. So this should say, let him not trust in vanity, deceiving himself, for vanity will be his reward. That's what he'll receive, and of course we know the reward for vanity is not going to be eternal life with God. It's interesting as we go through and we see these things. We must not trust in vanity and in pride, brethren, because both are sin. Psalm 12 and verse 2. They speak idly, every one with his neighbor. Interesting, this word idly is translated vanity in the Authorized Version. They speak vanity, every one with his neighbor. With flattering lips and a double heart, they speak. Psalm 94. Psalm 94 and verse 11. The Lord knows the thoughts of man, that they are futile. They are vanity. A man's thoughts need to be redirected away from self, brethren, and toward God's ways, toward God's way of life. But that's not where most people's thoughts are. Their thoughts are vanity. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and verse 14. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. This is the world that we live in, brethren, a world in which those things people seek to achieve, for the most part, are spoken here of as a striving after wind. You see, when we achieve, then we have something to share with others. And that has to be our mode of operation. If we achieve to accumulate for ourselves in the long run, that becomes the thing we begin to worship. Just like the rich young ruler who couldn't give all that up because he was unwilling to put that aside and follow God. The result of this way of pride and vanity can also be seen in the Scriptures. Let's look at that in Proverbs. We'll begin in Proverbs chapter 11. Proverbs 11 and verse 2. When pride comes, then comes shame. But with the humble is wisdom. Pride brings with it shame, brethren. Proverbs 13. Notice something else pride brings. Verse 10. By pride comes only contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. See, once pride enters in, then contention enters also. Daniel chapter 5. We see an interesting situation here in Daniel 5. This is the story of Nebuchadnezzar. And notice in Daniel 5 and verse 18, he says, O king, the Most High God, now he's speaking here to Nebuchadnezzar's son. It says, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, a kingdom and majesty, glory and honor. And because of the majesty that he gave him, all peoples and nations and languages trembled and feared before him. Whoever he wished, he executed. And whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he set up. And whomever he wished, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne and they took his glory from him. Now Nebuchadnezzar was a Gentile king. But God isn't a respecter of persons. When it happened with Saul, he did the same thing. Saul was deposed and was replaced by David, a man after God's own heart. Notice Hosea. Follows the book of Daniel. Hosea chapter 5. Verses 4 and 5. They do not direct their deeds toward turning to their God, for the spirit of harlotry is in their midst, and they do not know the Lord. The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore, Israel and Ephraim, this is speaking in prophecy today of the United States and Great Britain, Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. And notice Judah also stumbles with them. Why? Because of pride and vanity. God says that these nations, these people that even back in the old days when he was working with them, and even with all the blessings he's given to us today, our pride will cause us to stumble. That's the way pride works. Notice Mark, book of Mark, chapter 7. Mark 7 and beginning in verse 14. We'll read through verse 22. And when he had called all the multitude to him, he said to them, "Hear me, everyone, and understand. There is nothing that enters a man from outside which can defile him. But the things which come out of him, those are the things that defile a man. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear." Certainly we all have ears to hear, brethren, because God has given us those ears. So let's listen. "And when he had entered a house away from the crowd, his disciples asked him concerning the parable. And he said to them, 'Are you thus without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatever enters a man from outside cannot defile him? Because it does not enter his heart, but his stomach, and is eliminated, thus purifying all foods.' And he said, 'What comes out of a man, that defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornication, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All of these evil things come from within and defile a man.'" Do we see, brethren, how God classifies pride? It is evil, and God hates it, and we have to get it out of our lives. 1 Timothy 3, and beginning in verse 1. Now this is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work, a minister. A bishop must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, nor greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Qualifications of a minister, of a bishop of God. And pride is at the bottom of this whole list of things, because if pride is there, there's no way he can please God and teach God's way. Proverbs 22, Proverbs 22 and verse 8. He who sows iniquity will reap sorrow, for the rod of his anger will fail. This word sorrow in the Authorized Version is translated vanity. He who sows iniquity will reap vanity. Vanity is the result which comes from one committing iniquity. Look at Ecclesiastes now. We're right there. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 21. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. Yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. Vanity is shown again as the result which comes with committing iniquity. Now, what is a proper response, brethren, to pride and vanity? How do we conquer this evil? The evil that is so prevalent in the world. It's all around us. Notice how Hezekiah responded when he found himself with this problem. Go back to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 32. And beginning in verse 24. In those days, Hezekiah was sick and near death. And he prayed to the Lord, and he spoke to him and gave him a sign. But Hezekiah did not repay according to the favor shown him, for his heart was lifted up. Therefore, wrath was looming over him and over Judah and Jerusalem. And then Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord did not come upon them in the days of Hezekiah. Once Hezekiah realized that he had erred in this way, that he had allowed pride to overtake him, he repented of that. And he made a positive correction. And God saw that. And he held back Israel's punishment for the duration of Hezekiah's reign. Quite a blessing for those living in that time of Hezekiah. And for Hezekiah. Let's look at Proverbs 8. Proverbs 8 and verse 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance and the evil way. and the perverse mouth I hate. If we truly hate the false way, brethren, then we will seek the help that we must have to overcome that nature which is in all of us. We have to learn to hate pride and vanity when we see it in our own lives. And so often, brethren, we can overlook it in our own lives. We see it in others, but we often don't see it in ourselves. We have to examine ourselves. That's one of the purposes of Passover. But, you know, as we've said before, we have to examine ourselves more often than once a year. And if pride is there, we can see it, especially if we ask God to help us. And we have to get rid of it. We have to fill our minds with sound wisdom, with the knowledge of God's way. And we ask God for His Spirit in abundance to help us to overcome this evil. Look at Psalm 24. Psalm 24. I'm trying to keep my eye on the clock, since we've been instructed now that we need to keep these sermons shorter in order to fit the new mode of reproduction of the sermons that we're doing. Psalm 24, and beginning in verse 4. He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to an idol, and again the Authorized Version says, who has not lifted up his soul to vanity, nor sworn deceitfully, he shall receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. We must not allow ourselves to be lifted up by the vanity and pride, as did happen for a brief, short period with Hezekiah. We saw he repented. Saul did not, even when it was presented to him. God took his kingdom from him. Look at Proverbs 28. Proverbs 28. Verses 25 and 26. He who is of a proud heart stirs up strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will be prospered. He who trusts in his own heart is a fool, but whoever walks wisely will be delivered. Now we have to put our trust in God, brethren, not in ourselves. Because, see, without God, we're nothing anyway. And our eternity is not there. We won't be here for eternity if we don't learn to overcome this and to put God first in our lives. And God will have nothing to do with this. This evil comes from the way of Satan. And he has tried to use it with men down through the ages. He used it with Eve and it worked. And he used it with many others. He tried to use it with Christ. It didn't work. 1 John 2, verses 15 through 17. Do not love the world or the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away in the lust of it, but he who does the will of God will abide forever. This way of pride and vanity will not have a long life, brethren. If we do not overcome it, it will take our life. We don't want to be in that situation, because God's way of life will be preserved through all eternity. But those with pride won't be there. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3. We'll read 3 through 6. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, and being ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. See, these have to be our weapons of warfare, brethren. We do not be mistaken. We are in a war for our eternal lives. And to overcome pride is one of our major objectives. Proverbs 4 and verses 7 and 8. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all you're getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. God's wisdom, brethren, is required if we would overcome the wiles of the devil, if we would overcome the pride and the vanity of this life. Psalm 40 and verse 4. Psalm 40 and verse 4. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust and does not respect the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. No, pride has no place in our lives, brethren, and we have to get rid of it. Ephesians 4. I think we're coming down. I think we're going to stay within the time. Ephesians 4 and verse 17. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility or vanity of their minds. We must not walk in the vanity of our minds, brethren. We have to reject that way, which is of the world. This is Satan's world. And we must walk in the knowledge of the Lord, because we don't want to have a part in what is going to be earned by this world. Romans 12 and verse 3. For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. Be sober, brethren, in your thinking. When you get the feeling your superiority over your brethren, find a private place and go to your knees and ask God for his forgiveness and his help in overcoming that sin. Because, brethren, we can't have any part in it. We have to get rid of it. Turn, as a final scripture, to James. James chapter 4. James 4, and beginning in verse 13. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go and to such and such a city and spend a year there, and we'll buy and sell and we'll make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little while or a little time, and then it vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this and that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. Remember, brethren, the only control we have relative to our ultimate destiny is in our obedience to God and his way through God's Spirit that's in us. We need to ask God for more of his Spirit as we try to put on that way of life in our lives. We've been created in the image of God. If we follow his truth as he reveals it to us, fully utilizing the power of God's Spirit, which is within us, and if God is pleased with us and is merciful with us, he will form within us his very character. And with that, we will be able to live with him throughout eternity.